House of Grace, your podcast home for the big and small questions and answers of life with Sandra von Sapienski. Hi and welcome to House of Grace. In this episode, I do have the pleasure to interview Megan Curry, who is not only a yoga teacher, or let me say, Megan is a yoga teacher. For me, she's a luminous manifestation of the divine. She is so inspiring. She's a goddess, a perfect guide to lead you through your subconscious and conscious layers of body and mind. And I am so pleased to have this beautiful human being, this amazing artist. She's also an incredible artist. I don't know if you have listened to her songs or saw her paintings. I had the pleasure to talk with her, and we have a conversation about her dedication as a teacher, about relationships and love. Have fun. Megan, so nice to meet you again. We met first 1 year, so nice to have you, and thank you for inviting me to your home and have this glass of
kombucha.
Actually, this is so nice that you brought this up, because one question of mine is, how, honestly, Megan, really, I have to ask you this, how can you drink this mud-like smoothies? And did you do really garlic juice?
Okay, so those are two questions. How can I drink mud smoothies?
Yeah, because I saw this in your stories, and they look like mud.
Yeah.
And you really like it.
I really like it. I really like things that are, like, really weird, mm-hmm. but still consumable. Mm-hmm. And when they're thick and, like, a strange color.
Yeah.
I have a strange like for those things. And then... Oh, the garlic juice, yeah.
The garlic juice, yeah.
I was doing that. What was I mixing it with? I was mixing garlic with ginger.
Uh-huh.
Garlic, ginger, I think some hot pepper, and then this pineapple vinegar that I found. And then I had a friend come over, and I fed him the concoction, and we both sat there. I sat on my counter, and he sat on a chair. And we drank the garlic juice together. And I had another friend come over. And, you know, it was a big hit, actually. People were surprised. I do go through phases of, like... I once had this dog. It wasn't my dog. It was this man's dog. But I was babysitting. I was living in his house and kind of taking care of his dogs. And his dog would go roll in... Like dogs do, roll in dead things. And... It was my first experience with the dog, so I was like, why are you doing that? And she just loved to be stinky, like really stinky, like smell like death. Mm-hmm. And now I can relate. Like, when I drink that garlic juice, I understand. It's like, don't come near me. Like, it's like perfect. It's like a protection, like a garlic aura, you know?
A garlic aura. Nice. Yeah. You don't have one yet. So
thanks.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for... We're not consuming garlic juice.
I have plans. This isn't over yet. We just started. I've only brought out the first cocktail. Like, wait.
And I was just thinking about the workshop we are doing tomorrow. Breath is boss.
Yeah.
So this could be an interesting.
Totally. Yeah. Everybody walks in and gets a garlic shot
allergic to garlic.
And then we just go in and we're just like, for 3 days.
I would pass out. I'm really allergic. Wow. Really, very badly allergic to garlic.
What happens?
I go to the toilet and won't leave it for 2 hours.
It's like a cleanse then. Just a wash.
Let me say it's
a wash cycle.
It's a very intense cleanse. It's like you know, when you hold the water from a river, and then you just open the doors and it's like,
wow. I mean, it's good.
I mean, maybe we shouldn't go too...
No, like, we won't go too much into detail. I mean, I think that was pretty detailed and people get it.
It was.
But I mean, it's kind of a good thing to know. You know, if you ever need to wash something of your system, at least you have that switch. You can just pop a...
Yeah, but I feel really very bad.
Right.
At the same time. It's like in every direction.
Wow.
And sometimes my throat is swollen.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's powerful, garlic. Actually, I'm mildly allergic as well. I don't have that same reaction, but I feel if I eat it, just as a normal thing to eat, I get pain in my body and I feel swollen and super dry.
So but, I said, yeah, let's do a garlic juice.
No, but I can use it if I need it. So
yeah.
If I need it, I don't have those reactions. So if I have something going on and my immune system needs help, I'll pop a clove. I'll pop a clove and, you know, I'm fine. But if I'm not, you know, kind of, if I don't have a weakened immune system and I take it or I eat it a few days in a row, I have a reaction.
Maybe I try it the next time.
Maybe.
Speaking of details, we have seen 12 months ago. So what happened the last 12 months? And I do want you to go into detail.
Detail.
No, but is there something you want to share which was really exciting and are in really new insight?
Well, I rewrote my 200-hour teacher training, which was really exciting for me because as the years have gone by and I've accumulated more and more and more experience and more practice, I felt it was like finally the time to be able to crystallize everything that I've learned into the training so that the training really encapsulates the practice as I see it now, as I experience it now. And
that's to say it was the biggest shift in so that you were thinking, okay, I have to rewrite it.
Well, I would say that before it was a more, I would say, like general overview in some ways. And the sequencing techniques were also then kind of general and more basic. And over the years of practicing, I practice almost every day. And my practice is my study. It's my laboratory. And it teaches me so much. Mm-hmm. And so over the years of so much practice and so much experience teaching and learning from the practice itself, I came to a place where I was very clear on the sequencing patterns within a sequence. Yeah. So in a sequence, I see many different sequencing patterns, and I was at a point where I felt ready to really go in and articulate everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big part of what shifted for me, and just making it really authentic to me and sharing from that place more than what the previous training I had written was articulating.
Yeah.
I would say that is one of the main shifts. And just having taught now 15 teacher trainings, I think it was 14. After that many, there's in my experience, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to revamp. After I've learned so much, so I know what works, I know what doesn't work, I know what needs to be tweaked. I want to make this teacher training the best teacher training I can make it, because I value every person who makes the effort and has the courage to take that step and to come. So I want to match that with as much effort as I can put into it to make it the best experience that I can make at this point in time. And then I know in like two more years, I'll want to, you know, tweak or next year I want to. So it's a constant, for me, it's constantly changing. I don't see it being a reality for me anyway, that I would make a training that then I would just use forever. It always has to be evolving as I evolve and as we evolve and the practice evolves. So yeah, I made it into a training that I love, that I'm like, yes, I love this training. And I feel...
So if you just to interrupt you shortly, because there is a strange noise in the background, it's the door. It's not Megan or me.
Passing gas. I didn't just hear the noise, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just the second time. I thought maybe I mentioned it. People ask themselves, why is she?
We have a ghost. ghost here.
We do have a guest maybe visitor. We have a threesome.
Yeah, we have little invisible friends.
Yeah, that's beautiful what you said also. And I also saw that you have a 300 teacher training.
Yes, I do. And that's been a big project. Should I go shut the door? Shut the door?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah, if it's okay for you.
Okay, I'll go. Otherwise, every time I'll just be giggling. Which door it is.
Yeah, me too. So Megan closes the door. We'll be back like in 1 second.
Might be that door. or that door. Okay. I'm back.
We stopped with the 300 teacher train.
Yeah. The 300 hour is something I've been contemplating and planning for 5 years. And again, for me, I have a real desire for what I share to be really of value mm-hmm. and potent. And so it's taken me a long time to write this because for me, it's a birthing process. It's not something I don't want to just whip out material and then, you know, serve it up or something, kind of like fast food. I really want to slow cook everything and share from a place of experience rather than from a place of retained information. Yeah. So I'm now at a place where I'm ready to do that. And it's taken me a long time, but I feel like then the value that I can give can match the value of everyone who does come and show up, and the amount of effort and courage and what people, when they make that decision, it's a big decision to come and do a training on so many different levels, you know? It's scary. You'll be put in a place of vulnerability with people that you don't know, and often in a foreign country, and a place of learning and being stretched and being challenged and taken out of your comfort zone. And it's a financial investment. And there's so many different aspects that I respect, and appreciate and think about. And so the time that I take to put it together is to match that value that I see people bringing to the table, just with all of the different steps that they take and things that they need to align in order to make that happen. So anyway, I'm super excited about it because I'm now in a place where I feel like excited and ready and it's an expansive place of stepping into, I guess, a new kind of realm of space holding, because space holding for a 300 hour is different than for a 200 hour.
It is.
So, yeah, there's a certain kind of like ripeness or readiness that, and then I know that there will be like, there'll always be things to learn and always be things to change and ways to grow and feedback to be had. So this will be...
Are you also scared sometimes to is there also not a real fear but like respect to do this 300, or do you have this in general? I mean, you teach for such a long time and you are so experienced. People all around the world know you. Is there any time when you nearly pee in your pants because you're scared?
I just peed my pants a little bit right now.
Yeah.
I think that fear is a natural part of being human. When I was in my early 20s, I had idealized that one day life would be experienced without fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of that, that ideal that I held, it increased my anxiety somehow. Because if I had that ideal, then every time I felt fear, it was going against my destination, mm-hmm. or my idealized destination, which then would make me feel more off track. And then that would be a case for me to present more, I guess, negative thought patterns to myself or disappointment. And so I love getting older. I really love getting older.
How old are you now?
24 now.
Oh.
That was back. It was 2 years ago. I've come a long way. I'm 37. But there really is like a ripening. Mm-hmm. And the ripening is a softening to the experience of life and of myself. Mm-hmm. And within that, the realization over time that has begun to really affirm itself for me is that there is no ideal. You know, I feel like it's
totally
different for each of us, for one. Mm-hmm. So for somebody, maybe their experience of life was that they had fear and now they don't. That can be it. It can be also, this isn't the other interesting thing, it can be that you have a fear, say when you're in your 20s, or anxiety, and then it goes away for some time and you think you kind of overcame it, and then something else comes to the surface, mm-hmm. in your 50s, or, you know, we can't predict when things arise out of the subterranean levels of our subconscious. So, just to get back to your original question, yes, absolutely, I feel fear and I get scared.
What are the situations when you feel feared?
Situations where I feel fear, they vary, you know? They mm-hmm. vary. It depends on what I might be, what are my current circumstances, mm-hmm. and current interactions, and what are they triggering inside of me that I must be ready to look at,
mm-hmm.
because it's erupting up. So, you know, I think that really it does vary based upon what are the external circumstances that are pressing the buttons of my internal wirings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't say there's just one kind of
situation.
I still get scared on airplanes.
Yeah, oh, me too.
I do. I get scared on airplanes.
I secretly pray, like, please, let me land safe.
Yeah.
And I have this film, who takes care of my dogs, and I would die.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I do think a lot about my dogs when I'm on airplanes.
Yeah.
No, but just, you know, I think the same kinds of fear... Mm. that are common within the human experience of losing somebody or something, or you know, wanting to do a good job. You know, I have this desire to really want to do good, and am I doing enough? Am I enough? Like all of these baseline fears that they are in our collective unconscious. So,
did you like really fucked up a job?
Job.
Yeah, if you, because you said you really want to do a good job, and did you really, like, is it okay to say fucked up, or is it
fuck
very
up?
Bad
you can
language?
Say fuck up. Yeah, it's up to you. It's your podcast.
Apple doesn't allow me.
You can say F word in my house for sure. I mean, it's not my house, but I mean,
was there something which was like really, really not a success, like? It went. Everything went wrong. Did you have this experience?
So,
in your job?
Yes, yeah. And to go back to the roots,
mm-hmm.
like to the root of that fear. Then I look back to, you know, my experience as a child and
mm-hmm.
I had some hard moments as a child. So those are the ones that actually imprinted that in me. And then mm-hmm. watching certain patterns or certain like recognizable ripples of that mm-hmm. of that same fear is watching the echo of that original pattern that was imprinted when I was little mm-hmm. come up for me again, so I can, you know, look at it again. And the thing about it is I don't believe that we are to overcome something like, overcome.
Yeah.
Got it. Nipped it in the butt. Now I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Free of that. For me anyway, it's like, I think of, since we're talking about this fear pattern, there's an imprint, or maybe there's multiple imprints, but there's something that happens that imprints a certain belief in the fabric of our mind when we're young, usually. Mm-hmm. And then each time it comes back around in a different form. It's like a different play or like a different movie, but it triggers the same feeling. So we might not recognize it, that it's actually stemming from when we were a child, because it's actually, we're so distracted by the external image of it that we might forget about, when did I originally feel this feeling? But each time it comes back around, it's like how the ocean, every time it comes in on the rocks, it like peels away a tiny layer of the rocks. And I really think of our patterns that arise for us at our trigger points to be just like this. Like each time it comes back around, I have the opportunity to let it reveal one more layer. Mm-hmm. And to let it be a slow process. And therefore the whole thing can be just to allow myself to be more soft and more human and more vulnerable and embrace my insecurities and let myself be, you know, fragile and tender, and that's okay. And back to your original question. So yes, in my childhood, for sure, there was some imprints of that. Mm-hmm. And then they have played out in various ways. Like when I was a waitress, I was a terrible waitress. At first, I think I got fired from 3 waitressing jobs.
I was a waitress too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you a good waitress?
I was very shy.
Okay.
When I started, I was so shy. When I served a drink, my hand was so much shaking that I spilled. Spilled everything over it.
Right. No.
Yeah. I served like helicopter coffees.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. But it helped me so much to speak up and discover also an outgoing side, because I was bullied when I was a child, and I was still so insecure when I started to work as a waitress.
Right. Yes.
So you also were you nervous, or you forgot things?
Oh, I didn't even know what I was. I had no idea. I was both. I was like, I would forget everything. All the tables would be mad at me. I'm just thinking back to my first waitressing job. I think I was 16 or something. And I just remember all the tables being so angry at me because I just couldn't do it. I didn't know what I was doing. And but then I actually became really good at it. Mm-hmm. But then I did get fired from my last waitressing job. Even, you know, I became a good waitress, but then my attitude became really bad. I think, it was the end of my ability to serve tables. And so it was that kind of like that threshold when, you know, it's like your spirit's really unhappy. Your spirit's like, no, I can't be doing this anymore. So that comes out in all sorts of manifestations mm-hmm. of your emotional capacities or experiences. And I remember this one, I was working at this restaurant that was like a big drinking restaurant. So I was serving this table and they had had lots of beers. And it was at a moment where I wasn't drinking any alcohol. Mm-hmm. I go through different phases of this, but I wasn't drinking any alcohol. And in my mind, they had had too much to drink. So they asked for another beer. And I remember I looked and I was like, and I had a pretty big attitude. And I was like, do you really think you need another beer? It wasn't just that that got me fired. It was some other things too. But I, yeah, so that last job, I mean, yes, I've definitely failed at many things. I've failed and failed and failed. And also within the last 10 years of teaching yoga, you know, I was never, I never considered myself to be a person that would be, you know, doing business interactions. Mm. Interactions?
I'm not a native, don't ask me.
Transactions. Same, same, but a little different. But just to, you know, really, to really, I've always been a creative person, mm-hmm. so that's been a big challenge for me and a huge business, let's say, you know, like the business side of whatever industry, it doesn't matter, can, in my experience, be one of the greatest teachers because it teaches mm-hmm. about, well, communication yeah. on a whole nother level. And I was always a very creative person that I never looked at emails. And so for the first part of... I should probably do it. So actually at one point, my inbox mm. was at 800,000. Like that little...
No way.
Yeah, I think I have a You're picture kidding. Of it in my archive somewhere. But it didn't bother me because I was like, oh, that number meant nothing to me.
Yeah.
And it was probably, you know, half junk mail.
It's just a ripple on the ocean of my consciousness.
But that was just how I was. And for anybody mm-hmm. trying to do, you know, some kind of work with me, that's yeah. very frustrating because I wouldn't answer emails. So I've had my share of learning. And, yeah. you know, we can call learning mistakes, we can call learning challenges, we can call them failures. And, but I definitely over the years have grown a whole heck of a lot from the mistakes that I've mm-hmm. made, both in interacting with other humans. You know, I've made mistakes there, I've made mistakes in how I've planned things, I've made mistakes how I've not responded to things mm-hmm. or... you know, responded 2 years later.
Hi, here's Megan.
Yeah.
You wrote me 2 years before.
I actually did so that. No, I, because it, so the last, like,
I think they were so
year
heavy.
And a half was me mm-hmm. deciding to, like, no, it was the last, wasn't this last year, because this last year I've been really, you know, present in my, or the last 2 years I've been more present, but, and had help, mm-hmm. but, so maybe it was 2 years ago. I was like, okay, I'm going to dig into this inbox.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it. And it took, you know, probably a year to chip it down. Mm. And now I think I'm at like 300.
Perfect.
But usually I try to keep it at like 30. Mm-hmm. But it's because I'm on the road, so I'm not really
answering. Yeah, then it's hard.
Mm. Yeah. But anyway, just to get back to your original point, yes, I have... fallen on my face so many times in the last, especially the last 5 years, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think partly...
From the outside, it looks so different, you know, because you're super successful and everyone wants to work with you. And from the outside, it looks so different. I thought the last 5 years were... Or maybe it's both. It's like you became even more popular. But again, you had this...
I think
there's
that
challenges and who made you even grow bigger.
I think that that is what they do, mm. you know, before, before we can grow, I think we have to see a contrast of something.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I'm going through challenges, I might be the opposite of some people. I don't want to be on my phone, to be honest. If I'm going through something and I'm focusing on that thing rather mm-hmm. than being on my phone. So maybe in certain periods and I mean, even just from the beginning of whatever, Instagram or Facebook, when this whole thing began. There was periods where I would go offline for months at a time. And often it was because I was going through something, I was processing something, and I would, when I process something, I go inside. Like I go very internal. I go into my cave and I speak to the people really close to me, and I have a network of support, and I will tap into that, and I go in and I do my work. And then I come out and I'm like, wow, okay, and I've learned so much. And then I usually come out with and share what I've learned. Mm-hmm. And that's just how I process information. And we all do it differently. You know, I think some people process it more externally and they might share what's going on for them in that moment. But when I'm really deep with something, I don't have the capacity to pick up a device and write and, you know, and write about it or be external about it. So maybe that's also why I'm not sharing every single moment that I have felt a challenge, but I do share it in a different type of way. I share it with my art or my songs or when I'm painting or the way I move in practice is often how I express things that I can't express in words, mm-hmm. because I lose my words when I'm processing something.
But when you write later, it's so beautiful.
Thanks.
And it's so vulnerable. I mean, one of the latest posts was about your vulnerability, and I just wrote it down. No, I didn't.
Insecurity, I wrote one
insecurity,
yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was so beautiful.
Thank
and it's
you.
So important to share it. And I'm also not sure if it's really processed when you are only writing externally about it. I think there are always, or this is at least something which I discovered the last 2 years, when you have challenges and there are challenging emotions, situations, you need to just sit there with a feeling with your little monster and hug it and sit there and have a cup of tea, and at some time it dissolves and it hugs you again. And then it says goodbye, but you've learned something, and it's digesting. Mm-hmm. It's digesting, and you can't digest when you are just outside. So sitting there in quietness with your emotions.
I would say we're all different. We're all so different, you know, like when I get too caught up in, when I'm contemplating something, mm-hmm. About how I might do something versus how somebody else might do something or, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I like to zoom out and like hover above the earth, yeah. like in my mind, mm-hmm. and look back at the earth and mostly like at a jungle, let's mm-hmm. say, and look at all the diversity. And it helps me to put back into perspective, right, there's not like, you're not doing it wrong, or I'm not doing it wrong, or there's not like a wrong or right way, there's not one roadmap. Two songbirds, you know, they don't necessarily sing in the exact same way. And I think that it can be that for some people to externalize it can really help them process. I see that as a possibility. It's just I don't comprehend it for myself because I don't externalize things in that way, but I really do think that it is possible for people that maybe there's not just digesting is such a unique and spontaneous thing.
Yes, you're right. I also write also when I'm in the process, but I still need, before I write, I need to sit down and watch it and sit with it.
Yeah.
And then I can write about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah. But thank you so much for sharing and sharing your vulnerability. I also ask myself, because I'm personally interested in that, you travel so much. And for me, the last month were also a lot of travel. I mean, and now I'm in Amsterdam with you. I'm not teaching, but I have free time and can study with you. I'm so much looking forward for the next days. And then I go in July to China and teach there. And I'm nearly pee my pants because of that. I'm really excited about it. And I was traveling like all over Germany and Switzerland. And I had nearly no time for my relationship, and this was really challenging. And I, for my love relationship, so how do you handle this? And also sometimes I feel this is so strange. I feel quite lonely, but I don't want to go out and meet people at the same time. Can you relate? Do you have this as well, or and how do you manage this with your with all your relationships and especially with your love relationship? Let me learn from you, Megan.
My invisible love relationship. How do I manage it? Well, he's invisible, so it's quite easy because I don't have to pay for a plane ticket.
Okay, that's perfect. Shall we call him Pierre?
He's very quiet. Nobody notices that he's even there at dinner, and I don't have to pay for his meal. He's cool. I would have to say I'm very lucky because my lover is invisible, and so. I am, over the years, I have been over the years, I've had a few relationships over the years, a couple handfuls. No, I'm just kidding, that was a joke, but I couldn't say that, again, there would be one kind of equation or something that would work for that question. I think that it's very individual, and I have found that I don't so far thrive in a long distance relationship, and that for me is personal, and that could change because each person that we're with, each step along the path that we're with them, we have almost like a different chemical concoction with that person, and there will be some moments and some people that, you know, it does work, or we find a way to make it work based on what are our needs here, and also our sacrifices. And then there'll be others that actually it just doesn't work with, you know? So for me so far, I've had a few and they've worked for a bit, but then they haven't worked. But I also wouldn't attribute only that to the long distance. I think I would attribute that to bigger things than that, which would just be some incompatibility things that, just not being as compatible with these men, but definitely learned a lot of lessons. And currently I'm single, and
so her email address is... No, just kidding.
My invisible phone number. You can find it in the invisible subtext. But I have to say that this is one of the times in my life that I'm realizing how happy I am to be single. Mm-hmm. And the gift of being single for me. I'm still open to meeting somebody, but a thing that I've contemplated for many years is what is love, baby? No, I mean, really, like, love is a conditioning. We're conditioned into another ideal. We have so many ideals in our tree, the tree of our mind, and so for me it's been many years of kind of contemplating and peeling it apart. So many of my ideals that I think are quite common are this kind of romantic, you know, relationship that should look like this and this and this and the other. And I'm becoming more grounded, I guess, in being able to sit with a new reality. I just don't know if this idealized type of romantic relationship is actually real. Like, it's real, you know, it can be real if you want it to be real. But again, it's stemming from this romantic era and the conditioning that comes from it. Mm-hmm. And I really like to inspect that, because then what I'm doing is I'm looking at a belief system that's been put in place in my mind and asking, okay, but how do I feel about that? And how does it make me feel if I just succumb to it. Because if I succumb to it, and I'm not in a relationship where like the love of my life hasn't come along, mm-hmm. quote unquote, the love of my life, then due to the ideal, I'll feel lesser than, or I'll feel bad or whatever, because it, my circumstances are not living up to that ideal that I've learned about love. So my perceptions on love and relationship have altered a lot over the last years, and I've taken a bit of a deeper inspection. And with this deeper inspection, I feel as though a long-term or a long-distance relationship mm-hmm. would look different now mm-hmm. because of my own curious inquiry into what is love to me. You know, what do I want it to look like? What does it actually mean?
What is it right now for you? Do you have a did you find a definition for you, or did you define values you want to live in a relationship? Or
so my definition of love is to hold space for all the differences. That's mm-hmm. my definition that's that I've beautiful. Come to so far, mm-hmm. and that's the, like, when I say love every moment, that's what it means to me. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm talking about loving every moment in terms of a romanticized mm-hmm. type of love that we've grown up with all the movies and Disney movies and just the way we've been, you know, been conditioned, then love every moment would mean that moment to moment I need to be like enchanted and like swept mm-hmm. off my feet and in this kind of like gushing ecstasy of like the high of love. And I started contemplating that many, many years ago and thinking, well, really? But life is so diverse, mm-hmm. you know, that my experiences and what I feel and what I observe other people experiencing and feeling, and the ups and the downs and all the different kind of karmic wheels that we're riding brings so much diversity. And if I'm only after the sugar high, then I'm guaranteed the rock bottom.
Yeah.
But if I can open up my kind of like spectrum of, or my palate, let's say, to appreciate more flavors. I've never been in wine. Like, I love wine and I love tasting wine, but I have not been trained to actually mm-hmm. pick out all the different flavors. But I know that this is like an extensive education, and you expand your palate to be able to hold space mm-hmm. for all of those flavors, and then to be able to articulate what they are. And for me, this is holds the essence of what is love, is to be able to, we expand our palates as into like the fullest wingspan of this human experience and hold space for all of them. And to me, that in my heart, when I remember that, it feels like a connection opens to just to life, just to the universe, that in turn is an automatic form of appreciation or prayer or of gratitude, without saying, dear, blah, 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 I'm very grateful, even though I do that as well. But just being here now with whatever is, to me, that's my definition of what it is to love, rather than zeroing in on, you know, one aspect. And so when that comes to another human being, of course, there needs also to be some discerning. And the discerning is because we come, we're a bundle of patterns, and our patterns will attract other patterns. So conditioning often attracts that similar conditioning, or the opposition, which triggers your conditioning or triggers your trigger points. So the discernment is then, when looking at partners, to realize, like, hold space for the differences that are arising within your trigger points, how you're being triggered. But then it can be that we fall in love, like we think it's love, but it can be actually that it's just fulfilling an aspect of one's conditioning that they feel, I guess, a void within. So the experience of love with another individual becomes more complex, because not only are we conditioned with this kind of like romantic idea of love, but also we're conditioned with our own patterns. So therefore, I might be attracted to somebody who's, let's say, emotionally unavailable, and feel like, oh my God, I'm so in love with this person. Mm-hmm. But the truth of that might be that I'm actually in love with the fact that they're unavailable, because I feel safe there. So then it takes a bit more discernment to be like, okay, well, what, you know, back though to your original question, because it was about how do you handle that traveling. And I don't think that there's just one way, and I think it's a much deeper question that goes back to, well, what is it that's being triggered? And that's the starting point of anything, because those trigger patterns, whatever they are in you and in your love or your friend or whatever it might be, these are the interesting pieces to navigate, because that's where we can really learn. We can learn about our individual conditioning, our social conditioning, and then from there we can begin to make choices. And that is like, sounds easy. You know, we look at our conditioning. We look at, okay, I'm going to be triggered. And then we just make choices.
Why I didn't think about
this. Just make a choice. But I mean, that work and that process in itself is like, I don't know, like trenching through a swamp for 40 days or maybe 2 years. But then we know that when we do that, we come through that swamp, or maybe we don't come through it, but we've grown so much.
And just going through this and evaluate, what are my values? What do I want in a relationship? Why do I need so much intimacy? And why do I want to be very close? And the most important question, can I allow myself to be loved? And it's and that's the thing with scary and frightening and uncomfortable stuff. When you dig deeper, or like your picture with the ocean and the rock and the layer you cut off millimeter per millimeter, this is something so rewarding in the end, because you soften into openness and you become a more clear space, and you attain the availability to see all your feelings, to see all your conditionings, and you are so compassionate for yourself. And from this point of view, you can, or this is what I could experience sometimes, you can choose different actions, and you can choose different sentences you say, or things you do. And this is probably also the most beautiful thing yoga, and I don't mean only asana, I also mean the philosophy, etc., what yoga has gifted me. And you too, you are one of my biggest inspirations.
So beautiful. I love how we all inspire each other, you know.
Yeah,
we do. It's like we just pass it on. We pass on little sparks that ignite more sparks, and it's really beautiful.
I would like to ask you for a last spark, because I think this is a perfect ending. And could you get your guitar, which is on the sofa right over there, and would you play something? Or don't you feel comfortable to do this? Or maybe later, or maybe in private. You play for me in private.
I didn't have a chance to answer, but I
also because I was just watching your expressions on your face and I didn't know what to do. That's why I stopped talking and
stutter and talk and talk. Yeah, I'm not warm at all with my voice, but I mean, we can give it a shot.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's give it a shot. Let's see. Mm-hmm.
I just ask her if I can film it too, but she...
I'm like, oh my god. Wait. Okay, let me see. What song is appropriate for this? I play... I'm really drawn to the, like, sad songs. Everyone loves this song.
Thank you so much for doing this interview with me, Megan. Is there anything you want to share? Where can we meet you the next time?
So I have a 200 hour coming up in November. Mm-hmm. And my 300 hour, the first module is in September. September 1st to 11th in Bali. Mm-hmm. And yeah, next year I have a big tour in the US and another retreat in Spain. So there's lots of things coming up, but I think to find everything you can go to my website at megancurryyoga.com.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you like this podcast, we would be super happy if you would rate us on Apple Podcast or if you give us a follow on Apple iTunes or on Spotify. We want to say thank you for listening to House of Grace and wish you all the best, and hopefully you listen to us soon.